We need a revolution. There's only one solution.
Hello and welcome to the Liberty Hour of Inform Life Radio on 1150 AM KKNW, streaming to Rumble and Twitter and Facebook. I'm so glad that you could join us. I'm your host, Bernadette Pager, and with me today is Dr. Javier Figueroa. Hello, Dr. Javier.
Hello, hello.
It's good. So good to have you here. Thank you. The views expressed on this show are not necessarily those of KKNW. We're not giving medical or legal advice. And during this Liberty Hour, we're just talking about voting and the importance of voting. Now, we're not going to talk specific candidates. This show is sponsored by Informed Choice Washington, a 501c3 NC4. And thank you to the great members of Informed Choice Washington who pay to have free speech on the air. Go to informedchoicewa.org and check it out. But as an organization, we do help encourage individuals and also work with Stand for Real Freedom to do surveys, basically, to help find the medical freedom stance of political candidates. That information gets put out by Stand for Real Freedom. So then they actually do some endorsements and recommendations so that you can make good decisions at the polls. But this hour of radio, Javier, is really focused on, you know, why we want to vote for health freedom. And then show you a little bit about what Stand for Health Freedom does. I did an interview yesterday with Leah Wilson, who is one of the founders, and she's an attorney. She's amazing. So I interviewed her for about 20 minutes, and we'll get to that in just a minute. But, you know, I wanted to talk to you. I made a list here. Maybe I'll even just share my list that I made of some of the reasons why we need to vote for health freedom. I've got it on my document here. Let me see if I can pull this in. Oh, I got to make it bigger.
There we go.
Let's see. Let's make it bigger. Can you read that? Is that getting better?
That's perfect right there.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of us, you know, as we said in the health hour, that we think about vaccines when we think about health freedom, the mm-hmm. right to say yes or no to a vaccine product. But it's so much bigger than that. The impact on your elected officials and your medical freedom. So, you know, there's vaccination laws and exemptions. So you do have to have the right people in office to make sure that they do not legislate away your right to medical, religious, philosophical exemptions. It's crazy that some states are actually legislating away from medical exemptions, like California. It's so difficult to get. In a lot of states, the only thing doctors feel comfortable writing are medical exemptions if somebody's had a full-blown anaphylactic shock reaction to a vaccine. Javier, in Washington once, it was the year of the measles, when there were 72 whopping cases in an inbreak. A legislator, they were taking away the personal exemption to MMR, because in Washington there was a medical exemption, religious, and as well as philosophical or personal right. exemption. And I actually heard a legislator stand on the floor, I don't remember if it was the House or Senate, but she said, well, you know, my own nephew has a medical exemption, and so does his siblings, because when he was vaccinated, he had a really bad adverse reaction. He was hospitalized. It was really bad. And they decided that he was probably genetically susceptible. And so he has a medical exemption. And so do his siblings. And I was up in the gallery watching this unfold, and I so much wish they would allow me to raise my hand and have public comment, but you can't do that on the floor of sessions. What she was putting forward, because she was voting to remove the personal exemption.
Oh.
what she was putting forward, that it's okay for all of us in the United States to sacrifice our firstborn as guinea pigs to the program. If your first child has an adverse reaction, then you get to opt your children out. But first you have to present them as guinea pigs to find out whether or not they're going to be injured. What the heck? I mean, it was just so convoluted. So we need to keep a watchful eye on that, because that happens with our elected officials.
Yes. And again, elected officials are not medical doctors, and they're not your medical doctors, even if they are MDs.
No.
Making decisions population-wide. And that's not the role of government. Is there to protect your rights and manage basic functions. That's it. They're not there to be the morality police. They're not there to actually dig into your personal life.
Exactly. Amen to that. And so then insurance laws. So a lot of people don't understand that what gets paid for at the national level, say Medicare, Medicaid type programs, as well as state insurance and private insurance, what private insurance companies are required to pay for, or things they don't have to pay for. That happens in Congress or in your own state legislative body, right? So, you know, they're great about coming on board and telling all insurance companies, you have to pay for a cancer screening. But they may not be saying, if somebody requests IV vitamin C, you got to pay for that for their cancer.
Right.
Yeah. Or pay for their ivermectin for their COVID. They'll pay for the remdesivir and the emergency use authorized products because they're required to by various laws, right? So it's really important. And a lot of people choose their healthcare modalities based on what their insurance will cover.
That right there is an insurance company playing doctor, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't see any other option there. Basically, this is all we're going to cover for you.
Right.
And it doesn't matter what it is. I mean, it could be the most standard everyday treatment, or it could be the newest treatment out there. But again, mm-hmm. it's medical insurance companies playing doctor, unfortunately.
And people have gotten so used to healthcare coverage spanning anything related to your health, to any medical need, that they really resent paying out of pocket for anything.
Right.
Now, I believe that insurance companies, insurance is a good thing to cover catastrophic events that do require so much care and cost so much. And cost is a whole other show about why it costs so much. Does it need to cost so much? But so that it doesn't devastate you and your family.
Right.
But the day-to-day coverage of small things, because insurance covers it, the costs have gone up and people are just unwilling to pay out of pocket. Mm-hmm. And because insurance will cover things at a pretty high rate, it becomes unaffordable for some people at different income levels to actually pay out of pocket for much. So really paying attention to who you're voting for impacts what insurance will cover and the cost of medical care.
Exactly. Yes. And the one thing that we have to consider is that once you get past catastrophic, you know, there have been some good changes in the law that do allow for example, if you want to put money away into a health savings account, you can. Mm-hmm. So it's actually, you know, protected money that I think has a different tax tax strata. And that allows you to pay out of pocket. And a lot of doctors, many clinics now, are actually saying we prefer to work with people that are paying cash because the added cost of dealing with an insurance company is so egregious that it actually makes it worth their while to take cash.
Fantastic. I love to hear that. See, this is the power of the individual, isn't it?
Yes.
The individual going, doing their homework, getting the right people in office so that we have rules and regulations and things that allow you to have a health savings account. And then you making your choice when you shop for a doctor who accepts cash or helps health savings account payments. All of this help steer and redirect where medical care is going. The power right. of the individual to not feed the monsters, but feed the future they want to see. That's all within our power if we all just utilized it. Budgets for promoting mental health treatments. Now, this is huge. All the state legislatures, everybody is saying we have a mental health crisis. Seems like none of them are asking why, what's the driver behind the notion of having a mental health crisis, but it's throwing money at that, which of course is feeding the industry, feeding psychotropic drugs and all of that. Scary. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to agree with you that, you know, people are not looking at the root cause, which is the unwarranted and over the top rates of neuropsychiatric medications. And the fact that, you know, most doctors will prescribe two or three different medications without looking at the interactions. Mm-hmm. Once you get past two, the interactions are almost impossible to track. And you don't know what that is. And in the military, you know, all these antidepressants that are prescribed for treatments of post-traumatic stress disorder to young people, you know, there's indications that it promotes suicidal ideation if you take certain medications. Mm-hmm. So again, this is, and I've heard so many stories of service members that were given all these psychoactive drugs to manage their symptoms that they almost literally, they stopped themselves within minutes of actually going on a shooting rampage on base.
Yeah.
So when we see all these shootings, you have to ask yourself, is it guns or is it drugs?
Exactly. Right. And in order to help get control of what's going on, this avalanche of state money and federal money going toward mental health, which is going to more psychotropic drugs, which is going, you know, they're not going to these, there are some really good doctors out there. I'm not saying they're not, but for the most part, these people are not being asked, what are you eating? Are you getting exercise? Are you getting sleep? Right. You know, do you just need a counselor to talk to about what you just experienced that's traumatic?
Exactly.
No, those healthy approaches to healing and helping people through stages of grief, helping them through, you know, the traumatic experiences, and through holistic ways, that's not where it's all headed. I'm going to take a pause here on this, and then we're going to come back to these at the end. I want to make sure we have enough time to listen to this 20-minute interview that I recorded yesterday. I apologize. It was a little tin canny. I didn't have my mic set up correctly, but I interviewed Leah Wilson, who's the executive director and co-founder of Stand for Health Freedom. She's a graduate of St. Louis University School of Law, holds a dual bachelor degree in political science and Spanish from Indiana University. In addition to her advocacy work with SHF, Leah is the owner and former operations director of Max Living Indy, one of the largest natural health centers in the Midwest. And, you know, she's also married to a chiropractor, so I just so admire her for that too. And has a couple of adorable babies. So, she's a fabulous individual. So I'm going to go ahead and play that. We'll watch this and we'll come back. We'll go over a couple of more reasons why it's so important for you to vote for health freedom.
Welcome, Leah Wilson, to the Liberty Hour of Informed Life Radio.
Thank you so much, Bernadette, for having me. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and you continue to inspire me with your boldness and you're continuing to show up and do great work. So thank you for having me here.
Oh my goodness, you're welcome, and right back at you. You know, I love the people in this movement. I love their tenacity, persistence, and refusal to give up hope that we're going to win this. We were just saying just before we began recording this that, you know, really there are a ton of people out there, and they have been growing exponentially to really take this great republic back. So let's back up a bit, Leah. I want you to tell listeners who are new to you a little bit about who you are.
Absolutely. I know that it's a good question to answer, because when you hear about someone who's given their blood, sweat, and tears to a grassroots issue, you wonder why, like what brought them here and what do they have to offer? And it was in 2018 that my family had our foster care license removed because of my kids' vaccine status. So my two biological sons And my husband and I looked at each other and we're like, wow, this makes no sense. And we fought it all the way to the top, you know, appealing like what has changed since our last foster care placement with our home being fit. You know, that's a legal term. Like, are we a fit home? Are we a detriment to the welfare of these children, which is what we were being told. And there was nothing behind their determination, but yet they were willing to stick to it all the way to the top. So we just looked at each other and said, okay, where do we go from here? It's too big to fight, but it's too significant to walk away from. And at that time, what have you, but the measles crisis and the government was making decisions for our personal lives then also in 2018, 2019. And it was very obvious that there were many people who were confused, many people who cared, but they didn't know who to go to and when and with what message. And so Stand for Health Freedom, we helped fill that gap and step in as an organization that's wholly devoted to giving people a voice on health freedom issues, to empowering people to take a stand in a way that is effective for getting a message to the right person at the right time. And I guess God's stories are always so beautiful, because what brought me down this path was my background in child advocacy and in complex litigation. I was a practicing attorney. And then my husband and I opened a natural health center. My husband's a chiropractor. So it was this beautiful marriage of the values for natural health and the background in law and policy and advocacy that eventually brought our family to taking the leap to start this nonprofit with a handful of our good friends who shared those values, Sayergy and Dr. Joel Bohemier. And since that time, Bernadette, it's been amazing to watch. We've had over 5.5 million actions taken through Stand for Health Freedom to protect and expand informed consent. Those issues aren't, you know, some people are like, okay, how do I wrap my head around, have I stood for informed consent? I don't know. But there's five main pillars that Stand for Health Freedom really is an expert in and goes deep in as it relates to advocacy. And that's informed consent, parental rights, religious freedom, free speech, and privacy. So those things all work directly for or against your ability to make your own healthcare decisions and be free to make those decisions without adverse effects in the public square for yourself and for your children, for training up your children in a way that you see best fit. So those 5.5 million actions have led to legislative victories across the U.S., and we've been honored to work with you on several of those legislative victories and reaching more people and giving more people a voice so that together we can stand stronger.
Well, and I'm so grateful that all of this, I really do think it's a God thing. You know, I never used to talk so much in those terms, and in like the past 5-6 years, it's like if you listen quietly and just follow where you feel like you're being led to go, things are working out in amazing ways for helping us get back to where we need to be. So Stand for Freedom is structured. So there's, let's talk about how you get actively involved in working with Stand for Freedom, as well as how any individual can take part in the action. So how are you set up? And I should say, how are you? I am the Tennessee director of Stand for Freedom. So I'm kind of aware of this, and I'm wanting you though to explain the infrastructure of how this works.
Yes. So we are a 501c4 nonprofit, and we work with state directors across the U.S. And that was really our vision from the outset, was that we could help come alongside people who are doing great work and bring them some additional resources and tools so that together we can have bigger impact. Because this grassroots work, friends, I mean, money doesn't grow on trees, and the lobby certainly isn't going to step up to help us. And so this is the people. This is the people saying, yes, we want this. So our nonprofit, we have 7 full-time team members, and then we work with volunteer state directors and come alongside them and help them in the work that they are doing with Bernadette in Tennessee. And then we have 37 other state directors across the U.S. And in those states where we do have a partner, then we are able to strategize with them and support them in their strategy. And we don't work on state issues. Like, you might wonder, like, oh, why didn't Stand for Health Freedom put something up on this in, you know, a certain state? But we don't want to ever go against what the people on the ground are seeing and sensing and creating, because policy is created by the people who comply with it, by the people who have to live it out. And so that's our desire, is to partner with those who are on the ground working directly with their lawmakers and building those relationships. And then we can loop the people in to use their voice and support those efforts, support that lobbying as a citizen lobbyist. And so if you're someone who cares about what you put in your body or how you get to decide how to respond to a medical mandate, then you are welcome to take action with us. You know, there are pre-drafted messages that you can customize. We always encourage customizing those messages that go directly to your representative or your congressman, whomever has influence over that policy area. That's who the message will go to, is the right person at the right time on a specific element of policy, so that together as citizens, we can bring viable solutions to the table. Because if all we do is complain and say, no, 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 we don't want this. Yes, that does have an effect. It does. But if we can also say, look, here's what we see and here's what we want to happen, then that voice can be operationalized in a greater way and have greater impact. And so if you go to StandForHealthFreedom.com and join, take that first action with us, then you will be registered to receive calls to action in your specific area. So if you are a Tennessee constituent, then you would receive calls to action that have to do with things that are in Tennessee. And then we also do things at the congressional level. Our policy team works on congressional issues, but as Bernadette well knows, most of this is local and state issues when it comes to religious freedom, parental rights, free speech. Obviously, that's mm-hmm. across the board, but your state has a constitution just like the U.S. does. And so how do we be aware of those rights and be vigilant in protecting them?
Yeah, very, very good. And I want to let listeners know, because this hour of radio is sponsored by Informed Choice Washington, and its member donors who put this hour on the air, Lisa Templeton of Informed Choice Washington, and also of the Washington Chapter of Children's Health Defense, she is the Washington State Director of Stand for Health Freedom. So my goodness, that girl wears a lot of hats, and she wears them very well. So she works with you guys at the state level. So I just kind of want to summarize for people listening that Stand for Health Freedom will put their own actions together at the federal level. But when it comes to state and local level, they turn to the directors in those states who know what's going on the ground. And then they support what those state directors ask them to support and help push out the messaging. So it's so important for you to sign up for free, so that if there's something in your state, you will get that action alert and you will be told how you can take part in that. Now, when they go to StandForHealthFreedom.com, they can look at the map and under Take Action, there's a map of the United States, and they can look to see if there is a group, if they're signed up. But if there's not, like if somebody's hearing this and they want Stand for Health Freedom in their state, can they contact you to find out what's the process for becoming a director in their state?
Absolutely. Our goal is to be in all 50 states by 2026. So we do have that goal, and I think that we will reach it. But we definitely are looking for those quality relationships where people share our value for education, to approach these issues in a way that invites people into the conversation, that sheds a light on the truth, so that we can win friends and influence people. Because most people that we talk to can agree on some basic premises of parental rights and informed consent. And it's, how do we work together to protect those values that we both share? I mean, this is not a partisan issue. This is a human rights issue. This is a God-given rights issue that these rights are constitutionally protected. And just having that framework that we're going to lock arms with those partners who share our goals to educate and inspire and also hold it accountable. There's mm-hmm. that element for sure. And that's one of the reasons I know you want to talk about Vote for Health Freedom, but that is an element of accountability mm-hmm. to be able to show up at the ballot box as a voting block, you know, as a grassroots movement. one of our tools is to cast a vote on the issues that we care about.
Yeah, because all of this great work on the ground with volunteers, you know, working with their legislators, supporting good bills, opposing bad bills, all of this requires a certain level of health freedom elected officials, people mm-hmm. who will. And I like to explain how, you know, when I was in Washington working with you all, we would support really good bills and we would oppose really bad bills. But because the number of people in office who support health freedom there were way outnumbered by those who don't, mm-hmm. Our actions were limited as to what we could achieve. And there are great people in the Washington State Legislature who really want to succeed, but they need help. They need support so that when they vote in favor of health freedom, their votes actually can win the day. Now, when I moved to Tennessee a couple of years ago, within a couple of months, really good health freedom bills were passing because the number of people in office, it wasn't that there were better bills submitted here. It's just that there were enough health freedom minded people in office to carry such good legislation over the finish line. So this is so essential. And I'm so grateful that Stand for Health Freedom now has this Vote for Health Freedom. So explain to us how this works and then how individuals can help with these voter guides that you are creating.
Absolutely. And we know that in order to win these battles, that we not only have to inform and empower our neighbors and the people within our communities, but also help elect those that will be a voice in the halls of government, you know, that will show up as representation of our values of our community and create those good policies and fight back against the bad policies. And there's a couple ways that you can get involved. And one of those is simply use the resources, to access the resources, to find out how are certain elected officials standing for health freedom. You know, so we do these interviews. We also have the voter guides that show who's endorsed, who's recommended. And if you share those resources, then people can be informed about where those candidates stand on this specific issue. And if you want to vote according to that issue, that's what many people who stand with us vote according to the health freedom issues, because they are such foundational things, you know, constitutional issues that back the republic that was created by our founding fathers. So in 2022, when we launched this, we had over 1.5 million individuals access our tools, you know, whether it was to register to vote through our site or to access their voting location or to download a voter guide or to share a endorsement interview. So those tools are there, those candidate interviews, voter guides, and the carefully determined vetted candidates, so that you can not only know how to vote, but then you could also get engaged with those candidates, because grassroots candidates don't take office without grassroots support, mm-hmm. right? If they are accessible and available to our movement and to our state directors, those people who are endorsed, they are accessible. You know, that's one of the reasons we endorse them, is because they're responsive. We can interface with them. We can educate them and exchange ideas. That means that they might not have a price tag that would allow them to get voted by the lobby, right? Uh-huh. And so they need your dollars. They need your support. And we don't do those types of things for campaigns, but we encourage you to identify campaigns that you want to get involved with and support. The third thing that you can do is there's a candidate survey on the Vote for Health Freedom website, and you can send that survey to candidates in your area that you're going to have the opportunity to vote for and say, this issue is important to me as a voter, and this is an organization I trust. Would you please fill out the survey? And that starts the process for our state partners and for our team to be able to vet that candidate. Is by them submitting a survey, then we can go through our vetting process and determine whether or not they appear to be a person who shares our values and has the courage to defend those values.
That is such an excellent resource, and thank you. I know this is a huge undertaking in every state to try to gather this information. And so the more individuals, you know, look at candidates and do send them that survey. And if they get that mm-hmm. survey from 20 people, they're realizing, hey, there is a lot of support for this issue. And so hopefully then they will decide, yeah, I'm going to jump in there. And then they get vetted because, you know, politicians say one thing and they do another. And that's where it's really helpful. If you've been following somebody who's already in office and hearing what they say, but following what they vote and to see if they agree or disagree, that information is really good to have. And those of us working on the ground, you know, it can be really interesting. You know, and it's funny because I have found, like, even here in Tennessee, we've got legislators who are pharmacists and doctors mm-hmm. that do vote for health freedom. One pharmacist in particular, when I see him in his office, usually starts a conversation with, well, you know, Bernadette, you and I disagree about vaccines and the need for them. Although he agrees with us on COVID, absolutely no COVID shots. And so I say, I thank you for that. And we have common ground when it comes to informed consent and medical freedom of choice. And he said, absolutely. And we work from there and we get really good bills passed with his support because of that. So, you know, but it requires conversation. And I want listeners to understand that once, at first, it's intimidating to talk to candidates and to talk to people who are already in office. But once you get comfortable with that, you realize they're just like you and I. Mm-hmm. And it's very empowering to know these people as real people, as individuals, and that it's you really who are going to be their boss. And if they don't do what you like, you get to vote them out next time. So it's very powerful. Well, Leah, this time has gone so very fast. I'm so grateful for you coming on and your very busy schedule and sharing all this great information about Stand for Health Freedom and Vote for Health Freedom. Remind listeners where they can go to sign up and take action.
Yes, thank you so much, Bernadette. You can go to standforhealthfreedom.com. Press join so that you can get the action alerts as they come down and need your support. And then also don't forget to go to that Vote for Health Freedom website, that page on our website, and download your state's voter guide and share that with your friends and with your family. And if you're living in a district that you don't see that we have a candidate in that district, then send out those surveys and we will vet them and do our job in that way. So thank you guys so much for listening. For helping us bring truth to light, for taking action and making it easier for those elected officials to stand with us and harder for those who want the bad policy to get what they want done. So we appreciate you, Bernadette, and your amazing listeners.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you for being on. Have a great day and we'll talk again soon.
Talk soon.
Oops, there we go. Hey, isn't she just delightful? And just, I love her passion and she's so professional. It's really a great organization to work with. And I hope listeners will go to standforhealthfreedom.com and then help with the surveys, help push surveys out to candidates, because it's a massive job to get that done. But the more information that we have, I mean, just think about it. Think if we get enough in all the states, enough people who, even if you disagree about a medical approach, but they agree on your right to make your own choice, so much could change. Absolutely. So, yeah. So I'm really excited about it. That's, you know, our legislative session here in Tennessee, finally. I think I'm done going to Nashville. So that's, oh, it was a long session. We had one last big push that we put out to support a really good bill. There's a different version in the House and Senate. And they had to go to a conference committee. And I'm just, please don't die there. Please don't die there. It's an anti-coercion bill. I've never heard of one. It pretty much just says you cannot coerce a person to vaccinate healthcare providers. So one limits to age 2, the other has no age limit. So of course we're supporting the no age limit, but just the fact that it's there and it came from the legislators themselves. Constituent went to a legislator, said I was bullied and they came up with this legislation. So it's really cool that, see, and that's another thing to empower individuals. If, you know, if you're making some relationships with candidates as they're running and you get to know them and you, you know, you give them the hard questions, then when they're in office, you go visit them and you talk to them and you say, hey, I had this situation happen to me. And it turns out it's not uncommon for this situation to happen to people. What can we do to prevent this bad thing happening? And they might just draft a bill to help improve, you know, everybody's life. And that's what happened with this anti-coercion bill. So let's get back to our list here. So more reasons to really feel like take the time to vote for health freedom and to help learn about the medical health freedom stance. So we were talking about, there's oversight regulations. So like this is important at the federal level. I mean, what the heck is going on with the FDA and CDC? Why are they allowed to do what they do? How can they have their own policies that are so corrupt? They allow what's happening to happen.
Absolutely. And again, one of the things that really recently at when I was reading Bailiwick News, which is Catherine Watt's website, she basically broke down what EUA could, what was required by EUA, what wasn't required by EUA. And are you aware that EUA does not require an IRB or a clinical trial in order for? So again, FDA does not have any authority over EUA. There's no mechanism for FDA to have authority over EUA. So the whole idea that they actually had to get approval for an EUA, for a countermeasure, flies in the face of every legal and regulatory tenet that's available. They just did it.
They did really, I think, for a little game playing.
Yeah.
To have the illusion of safety oversight, to have the illusion of a testing. It was just absurd. And, you know, some of those VRBPAC meetings, the FDA's Vaccine and Related Biological Committee meetings, toward the end of COVID got to be so absurd.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I mean, at one point, you know, where they were bringing on, I think it was, they were wanting to approve like a third, what's the other besides the mRNA shots?
There's
one other COVID shot brand and I've completely forgotten.
Johnson & Johnson, the adenovirus.
Not that one. There's the other one that's still out there. It's a completely different platform. But anyway, they were talking about it and saying, well, you know, it doesn't meet this effectiveness level. The trials said it, you know, only hit like 42% or something. And don't quote me here because I don't remember the exact numbers. And they all looked at each other and kind of shrugged and said, well, we let these other guys get away with it. So I guess we need to go ahead and approve it because these other guys are doing it. I'm like, really? This is what it's come to? We let the other guy do it. So I guess we have to be equally bad.
No.
Oh, no.
That's absurd, right? It's absolutely absurd.
So getting people at the federal level willing to haul in, have these congressional hearings, to fire people, to get people fired, to do what it takes to have the government working for us again is important.
Absolutely.
School-based health clinics. Now, at the state level, every state is pushing school-based health clinics, which are very dangerous. We'll probably do another show on that coming up. They're sold as convenience. The only thing they're pushing forward is convenience for working parents or the working poor who, you know, supposedly, I don't know how they took care of their children in the past, but supposedly now they don't have time to ever go to the doctor, or I don't know, they're probably healthier if they don't go to the doctor. I'm feeling really kind of bitter about doctors right now. you know, and it's just, and it's pushing, minors a lot of times to make decisions without the parent being present, introducing all these mental health things. So really we need to just prevent that. There are other ways to ensure that those who find it difficult to get to the doctor can get support. We don't turn our schools into basically foster parents, mini doctor's offices.
It's no.
And who gets to decide the contract? Out in Washington, when I was testifying against some of these school-based clinics, it's like I brought up, like, who gets to decide? Why is it always allopathic? I don't go to an allopathic doctor. I bring my son to a naturopath. We go to chiropractors. Who gets the contract for the school-based clinic? Is it always going to be allopathic? You know, and what about in some of these very culturally diverse communities in Washington State? Yeah. What about a traditional Chinese medicine in the schools? Are you going to allow for that? Right? It's just, it's ridiculous.
Absolutely. No, that you bring up a good point. It's like, what do we want to, if there's going to be an introduction of medical care inside a school, mm-hmm. what sort of medical care is it going to be? Who's going to pay for it? And, you know, what sort of oversight are you going to have? And mm-hmm. if it's not the parents, I'm sorry. Schools do not own the children.
No.
Schools are temporary guardians, mm-hmm. but they do not have ultimate authority over the child. And again, that's another big push, another big political push that has been going on for decades to make a state or federal agency a guardian of children over the parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a very dangerous thing.
It is a very dangerous thing. There was a bill here in Tennessee about family rights, and some of the, you know, it laid down and codified the fundamental rights of parents, which are God-given, and it's a slippery slope to put God-given rights in a law.
Right.
I'm all for enshrining them maybe at the constitutional level, but putting them in law, because as soon as you write them down, then they begin to say, unless, except for, they begin chipping away immediately. But some of the language, just as you were explaining, was defining parent in such a way that in some situations, like Department of Children's Services or a school could be considered a parent in some situations. No. We do not want to go there. So another reason why you've got to really be careful who's in office, and then really even the good guys pay attention, because mm-hmm. the force is coming at them. The lobbyists coming at these guys is just crazy. And you'll have some of the lobbyists will look like they're on your side, and maybe they even are, but even they might have financial reason to steer something in a certain direction that is really not in the best interest of the people. So just it's challenging to stay on top of it. So good guys in office that you can really have conversations with. And I think that's one of the things I kind of interrupted myself. But, you know, if you get to know them and you go to their office and you have these relationships, and then, you know, your opinion can be respected when you go and you have concerns about a bill.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And again, it should be, you know, do no harm should be the rule of the law.
Yeah. Yeah. Calvin Coolidge, I quoted him in a public comment this year that I made. I think it was Calvin Coolidge said, it's much better to kill bad bills than to pass good ones. Yeah. You don't want to make bad law.
Yeah. You don't.
No. And, you know, that was my experience here. We had a really good bill 2 years ago, but it got amended by others to such a point that it was a gift to Big Pharma and it was a gift to the public health department. So we killed our own bill. We pulled it. Said, you can't have it. Nah. And we came back the next year really strong and got the bill we wanted passed. So
good.
You got to do that.
That's the way it should be.
Yeah, exactly. So minor access to healthcare without parental consent, that's happening all over this nation. And another reason you need to vote for health freedom. And health freedom doesn't mean health freedom for 12-year-olds. We're not talking about, because it's funny that health freedom, most of us in the movement, we understand it means parental rights.
Exactly.
To health freedom, not your 12-year-olds. And, you know, it's interesting, Javier, if you've ever looked really closely at the laws and bills put forward and debates and court, you know, filings, talking about minors, when minors do crime, you will get just a ton of research showing that individuals under the age of 25 don't have the emotional maturity or the intellectual maturity and even the frontal lobe capacity.
Right.
To make decisions. They're impulsive. they don't have good judgment, and they can be let off with lesser sentencing because they are young.
Yeah.
And yet you jump over to the side of mental health, reproductive care, and vaccines, and suddenly legislatures in Washington, D.C. wants to give 12-year-olds the ability to make their own medical decisions.
And have the right of the doctor not to inform the parents about it.
Yeah, yeah. You get to pay for it. Your insurance will pay for it, but they're going to hide it from you. Just in, I forget where we are in Washington, D.C. Is that completely gone away, or did they bring some of it back? Or
yeah, I think there's still a food fight going on with people trying to get that reversed, and that still being in place.
Mm. Yeah. So here's a couple other things on my list. I've got location of medical offices. Oh, what I meant by that was, go back to here. So a lot of in a lot of states, it's called certificate of need. Not all states have these, but there's a certain state level involvement where if you want to put up a medical office, you have to prove the need before they allow you to do that. And usually the big businesses, the big hospitals, they don't want you competing, so they bully you out of it. So having good people in office so that you can get a variety of places to bring your medical business too is important. Licensing of alternative medical professionals. Like in Washington, naturopaths are fully licensed and they can be your primary care physician. In Tennessee, there's no license for naturopaths, so you can't practice here as a licensed physician. I hope that they all group together and decide to change that. That would be good. And then the rules and regulations around your alternative care practitioners happen at the state legislative level. And that's really important because we need to support those modalities that support us. And so need to have that oversight. The military, you know, our military is used as guinea pigs. They're given experimental vaccines. They're put on psychotropic drugs when they come out of the military because of the trauma or PTSD they may have experienced. And so a lot of the laws, rules, regulations around the military that again, is your elected official. Because, you know, the way our country is formed, Javier, is we the people run this nation. We elect individuals to represent us because, you know, it's not practical for each of us to tell the military what to do or all these other functions that it stands for. And so you have the good people in office that oversee the agencies we create and the military we create. And they're not going to help give good direction and good fixes if they don't know.
Correct. And that's why it's important to really start, if we want to hold agencies accountable, we do have agencies within those agencies called the Offices of Inspector Generals, where you can actually go and start bringing forth not petitions, but charges, and have the OIG start looking into it. And the louder you get and the more people you get and more eyeballs you get on it, it does put pressure on Inspector Generals to do something about it. And then they can present those findings to Congress. And then you get to have some fun.
Now, this is a whole new rabbit hole that I haven't explored of action to take. So tell me the name of that again.
So the Office of the Inspector General, each agency like the Department of Justice, Health and Human Services, the Department of Defense, all of these have inspector generals. And their job is to audit and make sure that they're complying with federal law. And if there's a problem with it, they go and they are charged by federal statute, go and report to Congress. These are my findings. One of the reasons that we actually know that in the United States, there's currently $22 trillion of just money that is missing from the Department of Defense is because the OIG kept on reporting the results. And they said, we can't find this money. We can't find enough evidence that this money was appropriately used. And in some cases, they can't find that the money actually came from Congress. It just came from the Treasury. Okay.
Wow.
So that's important because that, you know, follow the money is an important criteria for finding fraud, waste, and abuse.
Interesting. I'm going to have to explore that more. Thank you so much. I pulled up the Office of the Inspector General. The website is oig.hhs.gov. Or, well, see, I guess what I found accidentally was the Office of the Inspector General for Health and Human Services. But you That's say right. for all the agencies, they have it.
All the agencies.
I think my browser must know that I'm really interested in health. And so it just found me that one first. I'm going to do some exploring, Javier. That's pretty cool. And so the final one, and this will see us out to the last few minutes of the show here, is the ever important financial freedom. And talk about that. I mean, we've got in this great state, we've got Catherine Austin Fitz, who so many people are aware of, who really explains the danger of central bank digital currency and the need for us to have real currency backed by silver and gold, real control, real sovereignty over our right. money at the state and federal level.
Exactly. And again, CBDCs, central bank digital currencies, they're just a new twist on an already existing currency, which is digital currencies. So they already exist. We use them in everyday transactions like, you know, credit cards, Bitcoin, things like that. But the real issue with central bank digital currencies is that they're programmable. That is, they can actually say, oh, you've got this much unit of money in your account. Well, if you don't use it by X date, it goes poof. Or you can't use this money to buy video games. You can only use it to buy food. Or if you're a bad person who has ideas that are dangerous to the establishment, we'll just cancel all your account. Mm-hmm. Because central bank digital currencies are not your currency. It's the central bank's money.
Yeah.
And again, we saw that happen with the truckers in Canada. That's the first indication of how it can be abused. And those weren't yeah. central bank digital currencies. It's much easier with CBDCs.
Yeah, it was really scary what happened in Canada. And so proud of the Canadian truckers and all the people who supported them with that massive show. I mean, I'm a little jealous that the United States of America, with our cowboy heritage, get her done. Why can't we seem to do that? I don't understand why we can't seem to have. We have small marches for liberty, for everything, but for some reason we don't seem to
well,
be able
I
to
think-
rally.
I think that what happened on January 6th was a warning shot to anyone, because a lot of the people, and I don't know how people feel about it. I'm not trying to be political about it. A lot of people that did not commit any crimes were put into jail.
Yeah.
And the lawyers that defended those people were either thrown off of the circuit court in DC or also thrown into jail. Mm-hmm. Most people don't know that.
No, right. No, but I want people not to be intimidated by that. It just makes me mad. You know, you really got to be careful though. You know, I guess you got to really watch to make sure some trap isn't being set up, but by gum, people, we got to do it. We got to take this country back. And one of the most important places, your vote does count. So everybody jump on board, go to standforhealthfreedom.com. Check out the Vote for Health Freedom program, help push out those surveys. Let's make a massive change with this next coming election. It's probably one of the most important elections of my lifetime. So, well, Javier, thank you for spending 2 hours with me. As always, it's been a good time. You've been listening to the Liberty Hour on Inform Life Radio. Everybody take care, and we will see you next week.
Are you suffering from a sinking feeling that the COVID-19 pandemic is being blown out of proportion and that nothing in the news is making any sense? If so, then there is a fact-based, science-driven news show designed just for you. My name is Del Bigtree, and I am the host of The High Wire, the world's most trusted news source in digital media when it comes to accurate, science-based reporting on the COVID-19 pandemic. From COVID-19 vaccine development to mask mandates, school shutdowns to job layoffs, The High Wire goes beyond providing you with the most accurate, evidence-based investigations. We send you links to the sources for all of our reporting so that you can further your own investigation and come to your own informed conclusions. High above above the agenda-driven circus of mainstream media, we do not run. We do not hide from the truth. Instead, we walk the high wire. If you care about truth, then join us on Instagram, Twitter, Roku, and our website, thehighwire.com.
Informed Choice Washington is a nonprofit organization that advocates for healthy immunity, medical freedom, and fully informed medical consent. The right to make medical choices without coercion is fundamental to our civil liberties and a basic principle in all human rights declarations. To learn more, tune in each Friday from 3 to 5 p.m. to An Informed Life Radio and visit the website informedchoicewa.org. It's time to take a stand for medical freedom. Go to informedchoicewa.org. Today.